We're there. We're here.
Here we are. here is the spot to be Tuesday nights. As always. Welcome to Scary Dad Podcast, episode 94.
Wow.
Now, it's something we've been talking about since like episode 4, so it's been only taking us 90 episodes to get to it. But this little feature that we talked about doing, this little project, we're going to entitle it Fresh Eyes. So this will be Fresh Eyes number 1. And the idea is to take a classic horror movie that we've seen so many times that it's just, you know, part of our lives. It just is what it is. And take these and watch them anew, beginning to end, without any breaks, without any kind of
no distractions,
and watch it as if it's the first time you've ever seen it. You know, and you know, for what it's worth, to figure out is it as good as you remember it to be, or is there a nostalgia thing playing out? Is it better than you thought it was because it's just been a while, or
right.
What?
And now that, you know, we're at a point right now, I don't know about you, but I appreciate different things about movies than I used to as far as the making of them. Just like I mentioned on a podcast recently, I have so much more respect for the Academy Award for sound in movies because it's so effective with just playing on emotion and everything with people during a film. So just when I watch movies now, there's so much more that I look at than I used to.
Same with me, especially with a horror movie, is, you know, the whole idea of what is scary. Scary is subjective, you know, and people who are into horror for what it's worth, they'll be, I'm going to say, almost cynical about scares, you know, like, oh, jump scares, that's cheap. Anybody can get a jump scare. It's like, well, that's true, but that's also what makes horror so much fun. That's what makes low-budget horror movies effective, is because you can, with some really good sound editing and some basic camera tricks, you can make a good jump scare that really gets, you know, to the heart of it, which is fear.
There's some movies that, to this day, even though I know it's coming and I've seen it a million times, I still jump every time I see certain scenes.
That's
because they're so effective.
And you know, we talk about maybe like a movie like Jaws, where the reason it's so effective is because their special effect didn't work, so they had to go to like basically old school suspense. And you know, you don't see the shark for most of the movie, but you know it's there and it's frightening.
Yeah,
we're not talking about Jaws today. We're gonna kick this one into gear with I keep wanting to say trilogy, but it's actually more of a series because there's so many spin-offs and different parts and pieces to it. But we're going to tackle the Evil Dead series. Starting with Evil Dead 1 and 2, Army of Darkness, and then Ash vs. Evil Dead, some of the comics. But mostly just focusing on the movies because those are where they came from.
Yeah.
So without further ado, we're going to get into episode 94. But first...
First, the old business.
It is June 30th, 2018, so we look back at old business. July 30th.
July, yeah.
July 30th. Those damn J's. July 30th, 2018. So we look back on this date with the old business, and we see what happened on this date. So while you were at work, you were at S-Mart, talking about the features and benefits of a 12-gauge shotgun. This is what happened this date in history. On this date in 762, Baghdad was founded. Old city.
Yeah.
Really old city.
Well, I mean, that area of the world is...
Well, it's
birthplace of civilization,
it's
pretty
been,
much.
Yeah, it's been there for a while. But still, you know, it's like, I think... When we were in Seattle, they said it was founded in 1855. You know, Houston, I'm not exactly sure when it was founded, but it was founded later than 1836, which was whenever the war was. So, I mean, that seems like a long time ago, a couple hundred years. Oh, no. All right. This date in 1419. The first Defenstration of Prague. You know what the word defenstration
means? No, I was going to ask you to define that, please.
Okay. It has a very specific definition. A crowd of radical Hussites kill 7 members of the Prague City Council by defenstration. And what defenstration is? They threw them out of windows. And they were killed in the fall to the street below. It's rough.
No shit. It's like walking the plank.
More like, yeah. Can you imagine having your citizens so mad at you they throw you and toss you out a window? All right, this date in 1626, an earthquake in Naples, Italy, kills about 10,000 people. Over there with hurricanes with earthquakes and volcanoes.
The volcanoes, yeah.
It's so weird to me that you see how modern and built up Pompeii and Vesuvius is. Like, not Vesuvius, not Pompeii itself, because it's the historical side. But if you look at Vesuvius, it's got people all over it. If it blows its top, there's going to be a lot of death.
Oh, yeah.
A lot of death.
And the volcanoes, while you can get an idea, they're not nearly as predictive as, like, hurricanes and stuff. You don't get much warning.
Yeah, it's kind of like an earthquake. They're like, oh, there's a couple of rumbles. Boom! You know? Okay, well, we want to get into the dark and esoteric. This date in 1733, the first Masonic Grand Lodge in what will become the United States is constituted in Massachusetts.
You ever been to a Masonic ceremony?
Uh-uh.
It's kind of weird.
I imagine it would be.
I've been to one where it was like taking the boys and the young Masonics and becoming Masons. It's weird. It's all that you imagined. There's swords and stuff.
And it's fire. And all right, let's see here. This date in 1932, the premiere of Walt Disney's Flowers and Trees, the first cartoon short to use Technicolor, and the first Academy Award-winning cartoon. So, the first color cartoon, the first Academy Award. Mm-hmm. Speaking of Jaws, throwback to here, 1945 in World War II, the Japanese submarine I-58 sinks the USS Indianapolis, killing 883 men. Most die during the following 4 days until an aircraft notices the survivors and picks them up. Most of the people that went down, that didn't get killed in the blast, got eaten by sharks.
Okay.
Right. This date in 1971, the Apollo program, Apollo 15, David Scott and James Irwin on the Apollo Lunar Module Falcon land on the moon with the first lunar rover. You know, I just think that's just like so crazy. It's just like a testament to humanity. It's like, oh, here's this unreachable object that we've been pining for our entire existence.
Mm-hmm.
And then as soon as we're able to reach it, we throw a dragster up there. Drive around. All right. 1975, Jimmy Hoffa disappears from the parking lot of the Matches Red Fox restaurant in Bloom Hills, Michigan, a suburb of Detroit. He is never seen or heard from again.
Yet to be found. Never will be found, more than likely.
In automotive history, on this date in 2003, in Mexico, the last old-style Volkswagen Beetle rolls off the assembly line. Those things were made for a long time.
Yeah. We're talking the other day at work about, remember when Volkswagen got in all that trouble a few years back for lying about emissions tests?
Mm-hmm.
They made it through that pretty easily. It was the people that were buying them for the sake of the environment, they held on to their beliefs. It's like they refused to believe that they had been lied to.
Yeah.
It's so weird, man.
Well, I couldn't...
It would have crushed Ford if Ford would have been caught lying about something like that, you know?
Well, what I couldn't believe is they're like, oh yeah, we lied, so here's a little box that you can attach to it. And it's like...
I mean, you're still not lying.
I think that if it was that easy...
It would have been on there to begin with.
You would have just put the box on there to begin with, right? That little box just makes the numbers different. It doesn't necessarily make the emissions different. All right. Notable births. Speaking of cars, 1863, Henry Ford was born, founder of the Ford Motor Company.
Revolutionary in his industry, for sure.
1936, guitarist Buddy Guy.
I love Buddy Guy. Ride, Sally, ride.
Just throw it on there and take a listen. Not really in the same class, but it's funny to mention. In 1941, Paul Anka. And this date in 1947, the Governator himself, Arnold Schwarzenegger, would have said the Terminator or the Terminator 2 or
Kindergarten Cop.
That Dutch, you know. But no, he's the Governator. I know your taxes.
I was watching Chief's East the other day, and they were Chief's East, that show I told you about. It's like Mystery Science Theater, but mm-hmm. It was with old sports that used to come on ESPN too. And they were showing the it was like the 1979 Mr. Olympia Classic with Arnold, and they were like, wait, this is 79. His accent has gotten worse. How is that possible for him to talk worse now than he did back then?
It is strange. It's like he had his, like, but I think he was taking, like, acting classes and stuff, so he was constantly practicing.
Yeah.
Now he just does whatever he wants.
Well, he can.
Okay, 1948, Jean Reno. He was the Professional.
Oh, okay.
Jean Reno.
That's a great, great movie, man. Gary Oldman is phenomenal in that film.
One of his best. Love that, where he's like popping the pills. Yeah, his head, like, clicks to the side. I mean, what kind of pill do you take that makes your neck pop? You know,
well, like, I think he was getting a freeze from cocaine, is what it was.
Oh, he's just like, look, but.
And then he'd be just all leveled out.
Mm-hmm. Bring everyone. Who? Everyone! Just remember, kids, if you're going to Google Gary Oldman, do not forget the R. It'll return you some results you don't want to see. All right, 1950, Frank Stallone.
I love Frank Stallone.
Dude, they're starting to film Rambo 5. Have you seen Sylvester?
No.
That dude's like 70 something, and he's
still ripped, dude. Yeah.
He's big.
Lots of Botox in his face too. You can just see it.
Same thing with him. It's like he's a little real mush mouth talking.
Yeah. You know what's ridiculous about movies now? I was seeing the other day how they're able to de-age somebody. This is going to keep the same actors playing. We're not going to get any new actors. They're just going to keep recycling these guys and using CGI to make them younger, man.
Dude, that actually makes me really interested. I mean, I was already interested in Captain Marvel, but apparently they de-aged Samuel L. Jackson mm-hmm. for 23 years.
Yeah, so the pictures, that's just what made me think of it.
The pictures are insane. Like,
Kurt Russell, look what they did with him in Guardians of the Galaxy. They were mm-hmm. able to de-age him in that.
He doesn't really even look that old now.
Right.
And he's... So strangely enough, you know what Walt Disney's final words were? Kurt Russell.
Was he complaining about something?
No, he was about to die, and they're like, what are you trying to say? And he got a pen, and he scribbled the name Kurt Russell, and then he died. And they don't know what he was trying to say.
He's having a fever dream.
All right, 1968, Terry Crews from Idiocracy. He's in what else was he in? He was Chris's dad and Everybody Hates Chris. He's in so many things. Brooklyn Nine-Nine. He's awesome. 1970, Christopher Nolan directed Inception, The Dark Knight trilogy. What else? Quite a few others. Off the top of my head, I'm having a brain fart. And getting into notable deaths.
Oh, just one more thing on birth. In 4 days, I'm going to be 45 years old.
Happy birthday.
Thank you.
4 days from now or 4 days
from
the
podcast video?
From the podcast. Yes. All right.
August 3rd. So.
All right. We'll throw you a little shout out there.
45 years.
All right. Notable deaths on this date in 1992. We lost Joe Shuster, co-creator of Superman. They're talking about making the Man of Steel sequel, and I'm just like, just don't. just reboot it already. The other day, on 4th of July, it was pouring down rain here.
Yeah.
And so the kids were both like, I want to watch a show, I want to watch a show, I want to watch a show. And my wife, thank God, was like, I think it's Daddy's turn. I was like, let's watch Superman. So we just doing the Richard Donner, the original Superman from the from the 80s. And it was really, really fun and nice to watch. Because at first, everybody's like, no, I don't want to watch that. And then as the movie progressed, everybody just kind of found a seat and was just watching it. And it's such a great one.
Well, my daughter was like 7 or 8. She discovered those movies and she loved them, dude. She used to want to watch them all the time. I had a box that I bought that was 1 through 4. And she loved those films, man.
Well, I was about my daughter's age when, well, I was about 6 when Superman came out. So by the time I could watch it on VHS or whatever, I'm pretty sure my parents saw that in the theater. I remember seeing it on the big screen. But it's kind of funny because whenever they made Superman Returns, and they were trying to take the character in its own direction, and the people were advising him not to do that. And then I think it was Zack Snyder, maybe. He's like, the director was like, it's like, I never knew how beloved that movie was. And there's a meme that has that quote, and then there's like all of the like Rotten Tomatoes. It's like in the high 90s. It's like best superhero movie ever, according to like all of these different, you know, comic book resources and stuff. You know, the Superman, the original Superman, and that was a special effects extravaganza when it first came out.
Right.
I mean, that was
top, never done that before.
Top notch. And the flight effects are, I mean, yeah, sure, there's a couple of little things where his cape's blowing and you can tell that it's not exactly synced up, but with no CGI, with basically what was essentially just a blue screen and wires and stuff, they did a really good job.
Isn't it awesome that we're at an age where we saw the big part of the evolution of special effects?
I really think so.
It's just fascinating. You're going back to Sinbad, Jason and the Argonauts, and just all through everything we grew up with, and just seeing the evolution of special effects. We were in the prime for that, dude.
Well, you know, throw back to, you know, Clash of the Titans.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I think we've discussed it before how, like, you don't need a reboot, but if you wanted to do something that would be spectacular, is you would take that essentially perfect film, and you could use some CGI to like smooth
enhance
out the stop motion, and make it better,
make it blend better,
which is what, you know, CGI is so good at doing. And I'm not anti CGI, but I like practical effects, and they're so much more organic, you know, obviously, but they're so, you know, they feel more real. Because they are real. The characters are actually dealing with whatever that thing is that's making them, you know, bothering them. But yeah, you know, watching Superman, I mean, it holds up. It's really good.
Oh, yeah.
So goodbye to Mr. Joe Shuster. And that was really the only notable death we had on this date, July 30th.
Okay.
So we're going to take a break, and I think in honor of summer movies and the USS Indianapolis, we're just going to play that Jaws speech, that Indianapolis speech. So we're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back.
You on the Indianapolis?
What happened? Japanese submarine slammed 2 torpedoes into our side, Chief. He was coming back from the island of Tinian to Lady and just delivered the bomb, the Hiroshima bomb. 1,100 men went into the water. The vessel went down in 12 minutes. Didn't see the first shark for about half an hour. Tiger. 13-footer, you know? You know that when you're in the water, Chief? You tell by looking from the dorsal to the tail. But we didn't know. Because our bomb mission had been so secret. No distress signal had been sent. They didn't even list as overdue for a week. Very first light, Chief. Sharks come cruising. So we formed ourselves into tight groups. You know, it's kind of like old squares in a battle, like you see in a calendar, like the Battle of Waterloo. And the idea was, shark comes to the nearest man, that man, he starts pounding, hollering, and screaming. Sometimes the shark go away. Sometimes he wouldn't go away. Sometimes that shark, he looks right into you, right into your eyes. You know the thing about a shark, he's got lifeless eyes, black eyes, like a doll's eyes. When he comes at you, he doesn't seem to be living until he bites you, and those black eyes roll over white, and then, oh, then you hear that terrible high-pitched screaming. The ocean turns red, in spite of all the pounding and the hollering, they all come in, they rip you to pieces. You know, by the end of that first dawn, lost 100 men. I don't know how many sharks, maybe 1,000, I don't know how many men, they average 6 an hour. On Thursday morning, Chief, I bumped into a friend of mine, Herbie Robinson from Cleveland. Baseball player, bosun's mate. I thought he was asleep. Reached over to wake him up. Bobbed up and down in the water, it was like a kind of top. Upended. Well, he'd been bitten in half below the waist. Noon the fifth day, Mr. Hooper, a Lockheed Ventura saw us. He swung in low and he saw us too. A young pilot, a lot younger than Mr. Hooper anyway, he saw us and he come in low. And 3 hours later, a big fat PBY comes down and start to pick us up. You know, that was the time I was most frightened, waiting for my turn. I'll never put on a life jacket again. So 1,100 men went in the war. 316 men come out, the sharks took the rest, June the 29th, 1945. Anyway, we delivered the bomb.
All right, I get a shudder from that every single time.
It's awesome, dude. You're just watching it. It's a great movie, man.
That's another one of those that you just have to watch beginning to end.
Right.
You'll catch moments. There is a lot of non-shark going on. So if you're not paying attention, it can kind of get a little bit long in the tooth. But if you're watching it from beginning to end, it's astounding.
Yeah.
It's so great.
Alrighty, moving on. It's time for a little...
New business is new business, and this is new business.
All right. A team from the University of Turku in Finland recently found a new species of insect living in the Amazon rainforest, and it's the stuff of nightmares. We've talked about wasp on here before, and how they are just horrible, horrible creatures that it's hard to figure out what purpose they serve other than to hurt people.
Mm-hmm.
They discovered a new species of wasp with a stinger that is the stuff of nightmares. Look at the size of the stinger on this wasp. It looks like a hypodermic needle coming out of the back of it.
Yeah, it's longer than the wasp itself.
It's longer than the wasp body itself. And this new type of wasp, apparently, it's pretty aggressive as well. They found the new species living in the Amazon rainforest. The wasp is called Clistopyga. It's not only a long stinger, it's very wide in comparison with the size of the species. It's huge, dude. It's like, I want to say it's about 4 millimeters long of a stinger. That would hurt. And as you know, whilst they they sting you more than once.
Yeah,
it's not like a bee, you know, where it loses its sting and, you know, it can't come back after you. That thing is scary looking, dude.
It's terrifying. So I had to go to the doctor. So I sprained my wrist, and then it got better, and then I messed it up again, and then it got better, and then I messed it up again. So finally I'm starting to get worried that maybe I've done something. I don't want to do something irreparable. So I went to the doctor to have him check out, you know, make sure I wasn't didn't have carpal tunnel or something stupid. And so he's like, yeah, you know, here's what you need to do. Get a different kind of brace, and here's a different kind of anti-inflammatory, and just don't do things, and we'll take it from there. Okay, fair enough. It's like, I gotta talk to you about something that's somewhat unrelated. He's like, okay, what's that? It's like, my whole life, bug bites didn't bother me. I mean, yeah, they'd sting or they'd itch, but I'd get bit by an ant, and it would be, you know, it'd sting for like 10 seconds. It would might itch for a day, and then it was gone. But then about 2 years ago, I was out working in the yard, and I uncovered a wasp nest, and they hovered up, and I took off running, and one of them got me. And he got me good. I think he landed and, like, prepared before he got me. But he got me so hard, and it felt like a gunshot, dude. It was just right. Like, he got me with everything he had. And it welled up and was painful and itchy and all that. Well, ever since then, every time I get, you know, mosquito bit or bit by an ant or something, it swells and it itches and it stays itching for, like, days. And in some cases, even weeks. Like, just a little mosquito bite will just aggravate the piss out of me. So I told the doctor, I was like, I've read up that, you know, sometimes, you know, people can have different reactions, you know, little physiology changes when exposed to venom. And he said, yeah, that's true. It's kind of, what's your point? My point is, it never really occurred to me before, but people die from getting stung by bees, and I would hate to find that out the hard way. And he's like, let me write you a prescription for an EpiPen, and just keep it on you, especially if you go camping or anything like that. He's like, because you're right. He's like, chances are you're not allergic to it, but if you are, it doesn't take long to figure that out, and you want to have something.
It's funny how the body's physiology changes like that. I remember at work, I had a good friend of mine, Steven Hensler. He had been fine up until this point, and we went to eat at a P.F. Chang's, which we had done a million times. And we ate lunch, and on the way back to work, I look over at him in the truck, and his face is swelling up like you would not believe, dude. And I was like, what the hell is happening to you right now? Come to find out, he developed an allergy to sesame seeds.
Oh, wow.
And he had to go around with an EpiPen after that. We couldn't go back to P.F. Chang's anymore because they cook everything in sesame seed oil.
Mm-hmm.
So, it was weird how just all of a sudden
his
body decided that it didn't like sesame seed oil.
Yeah. A lot of people are allergic to that.
Yeah.
It's a deadly poison to a lot of people. I use it all the time, but you're right. Like, you just never know.
Okay. As I'm sure you heard, there's a new Child's Play TV series coming out that I'm not too excited about. Hollywood is, they've been out of ideas for a while now, and they like to recycle stuff going along with the television series, there is what is being called a Child's Play reboot or remake that's supposed to be coming out. Okay. Now, a website called Collider got some scoop on the film itself, and it sounds like it's not as much of a remake as it is a reboot for a more contemporary version of Child's Play. Plot details remain under wraps, so MGM hasn't confirmed any of this yet, but Collider has learned that it's a contemporary reboot involving a group of kids similar in the vein of Stranger Things, and a technologically advanced doll that enters their world. This doll is going to be able to do a bunch of cool stuff that was probably not possible for the original Chucky to do. It's likely the new doll will be named Chucky, though it's also possible it may have a different name now. And of course, Brad Dourif is not involved in this at all. Neither is Don Mancini, the original Child's Play creator. So I'm so not excited about this.
That's one of those things that I wonder sometimes. You're like, Hollywood's out of ideas. Okay, well, and that's fine. But every story that's ever been told has been told 1,000 times. You use creativity and you give it a different name, and you have a new story.
Mm-hmm.
So why would you, like, I guess it's, I guess you would only try to attack, you know, tie it into the Child's Play franchise if you were afraid that it was going to fail on its own. Because you need that momentum to get people's attention, right?
Right.
So it's a Child's Play reboot, but it doesn't have a demonically possessed doll, and it's not named Chucky, and none of the original people are in there. So it's not Child's Play. You're just using name recognition.
You're right.
To try to squeeze a dollar out of the Child's Play franchise. Which has already squeezed itself pretty hard.
Yeah. Yeah. They're seven films now, if I'm not mistaken. It's a, yeah, it's definitely not time, in my opinion, for a reboot. You know, sometimes just you let things go the way they should. Okay. You remember the Sax Man from Lost Boys, right? Dude. Who doesn't remember the Sax Man? Well, the Sax Man has a name, Tim Capello.
Yes.
And it's been almost 30 years since, over 30 years since he was on Lost Boys. He became famous for being the oiled up, muscular saxophone player dancing at the boardwalk. He's finally releasing his first solo album entitled Blood on the Reed. According to him, it's a rocker with a funky twist. Mostly classic songs I love to play live and twist them around a bit. And he still looks the same, dude. This is the cover of the release of the album. He's lost a little bit of weight, but he's still got the ponytail going, and he still looks a little oiled up and ready to jam out with his saxophone, baby.
So, in a funny twist to this story that you might not know, I have like 1,500 people that I follow on Twitter, and they're all pretty much horror related. So I get, I mean, as ADD as Twitter is, I get all kinds of stuff. So a lot of the stuff, you know, like the individual posts about a movie coming out or something, it all gets lost in the wash. But every now and then, you'll see like a thread you'll be interested in. And so I saw something, and it was like somebody had knitted a plush doll of the sexy sax man from Lost Boys and was selling it on Etsy. Okay? There's a lot of stuff on Etsy, right? Except for whoever created this doll and put it up for sale was contacted by someone who is not Tim Capello. It was like, I own the trademark of Sexy Sax Man. And he's not the guy from Lost Boys, but apparently this dude has been like sitting there on the internet, like reaching out to people who refer to Tim Capello as the Sexy Sax Man and shooting them down, being like, you need to stop using that name. I own that name. And it's just like ridiculous. But I saw that today.
That's crazy, dude.
You like bring this up. I'm like,
well, you know what's interesting is, I don't know if you listened to one of Jesse's recent episodes where he had a trademark copyright attorney on there, and he was talking about that such thing, and one of the things they were talking about is this this person registered the trademark cocky when used with books, in series of books, and got Amazon to drop all these books that
had
that in the title. And it's crazy how somebody can do that.
Yeah, they're trademark trolls.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's nuts. It's really weird, but...
Okay, in a bit of a comedy relief.
Well, you heard Gene Simmons was trying to trademark the devil horns.
I did hear that.
And it's like, well, you can't do that because everybody knows Dio did that before you did. Like, Dio trademarked, he didn't trademark it, but he's the first one to throw up the devil horns, or, you know, he's the one that became known for it, I guess. And but yeah, Gene Simmons is a major trademark troll.
Yeah. Okay. I don't know if you've ever thought about, and the thing about it is, it mainly is because I did my first will when I was in third grade. I have instructions set aside for when I die, you know, how I want arrangements handled and stuff like that. I don't know if you ever thought about that kind of thing, but this next story, I really hope this becomes a bigger trend than it's already becoming. Okay. A young shooting victim in New Orleans, Louisiana, my home state. Gotta love NOLA. His family decided to honor him in his memory at the funeral. This is pictures from the actual wake. And they took his body. In the funeral home, they made like a makeshift living room with a TV and everything. And he had a love of video games, snacks, and the Boston Celtics. So they took his body, dressed him up with a video game controller in his favorite Celtics jersey with zebra pies, Doritos, and Barks root beer, and put him on display for the wake just like this.
So he could play video games.
So, yeah, just to go ahead and pay homage to him for what he loved to do back in the day. But they actually, this is in the funeral home itself where they put a little office chair there and they put a lamp. And there's a widescreen TV set up, so it looks like he's sitting there playing his video games in his slides and socks.
Wow.
See the little TV there with everything set up, and they have all the seating set up for the folks to...
And you look at that and you wonder, like, okay, what compels somebody to do that? But then you look at things like Viking ships and pyramids, where they set them up.
Yeah. Well, we know what my
dad... They set them up with all their stuff.
When my dad died, this is no bullshit, my mom made sure that she put a fifth of Crown, a carton of Cool Filter Kings, Salem Lights, in his casket with him, so that he could have with him on the journey. So yeah, it's just, wouldn't it be cool to start seeing like a guy that was a fisherman, they set up a thing where he's in his fishing vest, and he's casting out, and his body is set up doing his favorite thing. It's a...
Well, we have yet to do it because
these pictures are crazy, dude.
We haven't been able to get the family together to do it. My dad passed away in 2014, mm-hmm. and my mom was just... couldn't... None of us were satisfied with the idea of cremation or spreading ashes or whatever. It's like, there was just so many things that Dad enjoyed and to, you know... But kind of at his core, like the person that he was, like the kind of, like... If the whole rest of his life had not happened, you know, like, where would he have been happiest? He would have been a surfer. He would have been a beach bum. He would have been Bodhi from Point Break.
Point Break.
So the plan is still, we're going to, you know, basically build a little boat and float it out into the ocean and Viking funeral it, you know, some of his favorite things, you know, favorite book, favorite, you know,
right.
And take a little piece, little bit of the ashes and set them in there and float it out and set it on fire so he has a Viking funeral that takes him off into the horizon.
Right.
So, I mean, that's not a whole lot different, you know, so...
But yeah, so look for these pictures online if you haven't seen them. The young man's name was Renard Matthews. He died June 25th in the shooting. Young teenager, died way too young, and his family just wanted to go ahead and
pay tribute.
Yeah, yeah. And last but not least, in 5 days, August 4th, we will have our first guest announcement for Texas Frightmare Weekend.
All right.
So we'll be finding out soon what's going to be going down for that awesome weekend that we'll be in Dallas.
They really need to move that forward a week, dude.
Yeah.
That lands on my anniversary. That's like...
But that's all I got for new business for today.
All right.
That's enough.
Let's listen to a little promo from Evil Dead or 2 or Army of Darkness. Or
Medieval Dead or whatever.
Yeah, something. And we'll be right back.
In an age of darkness.
May God have mercy upon your souls.
Something's wrong. Something's amiss.
And a time of evil.
You shall die!
When the world needed a hero.
Just swallow us all.
I don't want to die!
What it got was him.
Groovy. You know your shoelace is untied.
He's a 20th century guy.
For that arrogance, I shall see you dead.
Trapped. In the Middle Ages.
All right, you primitive screwheads, listen up. This is my boomstick!
Now, let's talk about how I get back home.
Foretold by a mystical book.
Within its pages are passages that can send you back to your time.
Forewarned by a wise man.
You must recite the words, Clatu, Berata, Nictu.
I got it!
Fulfilled by a wise guy.
Clatu, Berata, Nictu!
When the army spoke the words, the army of the dead awoke.
Now, he's got a date.
Give me some sugar, baby.
Sheila!
with the army of darkness.
You found me beautiful once.
Honey, you got real ugly.
Sound the trumpets. Raise the drawbridge.
Look out!
Drop the Oldsmobile. From Sam Raimi.
Oh, that's gonna hurt!
Director of Darkman. Comes Army of Darkness. They live. They breathe. They suck. Army of Darkness.
All right, and we are back.
Yes, we are.
And this being the inaugural issue of Fresh Eyes. Once again, the idea of Fresh Eyes was, I don't get to watch movies very often. So a lot of the movies that we discuss are locked in my memory banks of movies that I've seen maybe 10 or more years ago. And every now and then I get an opportunity to watch a movie, and I generally have to choose between something old or something new. And since I love the old stuff so much, I generally pick one of the old ones. But with technology and just life being the way that it is, I tend to watch movies with my phone in my hand, hit pause 6 times to like deal with one thing or another, whatever. You know, I don't get really the theater experience of watching a movie beginning right to end. And so whenever we first started the show here, I was like, hey, wouldn't it be a good idea to maybe just attack these things from a fresh perspective? You know, you read some reviews of old movies that were not liked, that had bad ratings and reviews and stuff. And like one of them, for example, they got really bad reviews, was The Thing. John Carpenter's The Thing got horrible reviews, and
it's a classic.
If you go back and you reread the reviews, a lot of the reviews that speak about the way that it sucked was so many of the things that you like about it. It was what makes it good, and it was kind of one of those things, because we probably, spoiler alert, we'll probably talk about The Thing in our next Fresh Eyes, because I just had the opportunity to rewatch it again, you know, beginning to end with no interruptions. But one of the things we were talking about in The Thing was, you know, it's like, I think Roger Ebert pointed out, it's like the whole thing is just a setup for a bunch of gory jump scares. And it's like, yeah, that is what it is. And that's the monsters are really effective and they're gory, and it's frightening, because the whole idea is you're alone out in the wilderness with this thing that essentially wants to eat you, and you don't know what it is or why, other than it's royally messed up and it's scary as hell, right? So all the reasons they didn't like it is the reasons it's so great. So so I happened upon, in building my VHS collection, I happened upon a VHS of The Evil Dead from 1981, a movie that I hadn't seen in so long, because you kind of forget about that one, because Evil Dead 2.
Yeah, it's essentially a remake, a better remake of the original movie.
Right. So I was able to throw Evil Dead 1 in, and so we're going to start with the masterpiece from 1981, the Sam Raimi classic, Evil Dead. Also, if you want a real play-by-play of Evil Dead, check out The House of Wax. Ricky, in their first episode, really knocked it out of the park describing Evil Dead and some of the stuff that went into special effects.
Right.
We're just going to kind of talk about the story and kind of where it goes, and some of the, you know, the cooler scenes in it. So, Evil Dead 1, what's your fresh eye approach to it? Because it has been remade, so...
Yeah, well, I've never seen the remake.
Me either. So
that I'm not being affected by that at all. Of course, first Evil Dead sets the stage for the franchise. We get introduced to the antagonist, the evil that comes to exist. It's a great movie. It's amazing how they're able to do that with that budget, that small of a set. I mean, the whole movie takes place pretty much in
one room.
In one room, yeah. other than the woods, it's the special effects are phenomenal. The jump scares are phenomenal. The story is great. And we get first introduced to a young Ash that hasn't found himself yet.
Well, I got to say, because, again, conflating scenes, and it's not hard to do, because even just rewatching Evil Dead 2, it's like almost some scene-by-scene replays in the second one. But one thing that struck me about the first one is how eerie it really is.
Yeah.
Like, it is an effective and scary horror movie. I think it's the scariest of the three.
Like, it gets to that feeling of dread very quickly, mm-hmm. where you realize there's no happy ending that's going to happen for these people. They're screwed.
And what's weird watching it anew is you try to put out in your head that that Ash has a future.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So he gets away at the end, and you're like, okay, well, but apparently, moving into the second one, apparently he got away and then just like time looped right back to the cabin.
Groundhog Day, back to the cabin.
And didn't remember all that stuff that happened before.
Because I remember when I first saw Evil Dead 2, I was like, wait, this happened already. Yeah. You know, he's been here before. What is he doing?
But as a horror fan, I don't remember Evil Dead 2, and especially Army of Darkness. We'll talk about it later. But Evil Dead 2, although it has that skull with the eyeballs on the cover, and it looks scary as a movie, it's not really all that scary. I mean, it's got its moments, but mm-hmm. it's really not terribly frightening. Evil Dead 1 is pretty damn scary.
It's brutal, when the girl gets attacked by the trees, it's a very, very brutal film. The scariest part of Part 2 is when he comes out of the water and he's Evil Ash.
Yeah.
That honestly, to me, that's the scariest part of Evil Dead 2. Because I wasn't expecting that to happen.
Well, I think, too, the girl in the basement.
Yeah.
I mean, her just... But, I mean, even so, with the whole series, it's kind of difficult because they crack... I don't want to say so many jokes, but they just talk. Like, the demons talk a lot, and they laugh, and they giggle, and they're weird. It's much more... In the first one, I believe, it's much more effective as a scare. Whereas in the second one, it's kind of like, okay, you kind of know these guys, and you know that they're... I don't know what they're trying to do by messing with Ash the way that they do in the second one. In the first one, they're trying to drive him nuts.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, and it's effective because it's like, it's unnerving how they won't shut up and they're just like everywhere. And no matter what you do, no matter how hard you hit them, no matter what you cut off of them, they're just like, bah, 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 bah. You know?
Right.
So I think of the three, the first one is definitely the scariest of the three. It's a horror franchise.
It's more true traditional horror.
Right. And then the stuff they did with the special effects, which is kind of the weird milk stuff bleeding out of them. And, you know, what do you do whenever somebody's completely demoned out and then they just, like, come back to themselves and they're like, please help me.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, well, I have the axe raised. I'm fixing to chop you up. Chop you up. But you're my friend, you know? You're my girlfriend. Like,
yeah.
You know, he didn't have that problem. He took that chainsaw to Linda pretty quick in Part 2. He was like, don't do that.
He was ready for that. Definitely.
So, I don't know. Thoughts on Evil Dead 1 as far as, I mean, agree, disagree?
I agree. Like I said, it's more of the pure horror film. Just the terrifying, scary horror film. Not as much as the dark humor. All the humor starts coming in Evil Dead 2. I don't know if you want to move to Evil Dead 2 now. Or
we can. I just wanted to kind of like chapter them. And we'll talk about them like maybe through the legend between the three movies. I just want to like touchstone each one as far as like, what's your impression of the movie? Does it deserve its gold star, so to speak?
It's a classic film, and like I said, it begins you get the young Ash in the first one, and he starts becoming the legend in the second one, and the scene that really stands out in my mind in the second one is when his hand comes to life. That is just, it's classic horror cinema right there. His acting with the hand attacking him and everything, and him trying to fight it off, and then he finally cuts it off, and it's still coming after him. It's classic Ash, and it's hilarious.
Yeah,
the hand really, really screws with him bad.
I have to wonder, too, as an actor, you know, for Bruce Campbell, because some of those close-up camera angles where it makes his face look all distorted and weird, like, he's looking at the dailies like, I can do that better. I can look weirder if you give me a second chance. There wasn't a whole lot of second chances in the first one. The first one was low budget.
Yeah.
Bunch of friends. You know, they killed off part of the cast because people had to go to work the next day. So it's like, okay, well, we just have to kill you off.
We'll get rid of you first.
But yeah, again, fresh eyes, watching Evil Dead 2. I think, because whenever I was a kid, you know, watching Evil Dead 2, the way it's always described is like a zombie movie. It's not a zombie movie.
It's possession.
It's a demon movie.
Yeah.
And yeah, they're technically dead, the things that are possessed, but even then, the bodies...
But they don't have to be dead. They can be possessed of being alive also.
Right. So. Well, I was going to say, in the bodies of the dead people, they're never really there. So, like, the girl in the basement, the professor's wife.
Yeah. Ted Raimi.
Yeah, it's Ted Raimi. But, you know, it's like, she's either a deadite or she's her, but you never see her dead on the ground.
Right.
You just, she's always up and moving around, and you know, but you never see her rise. It's not like Living Dead, where it's like, oh, I was dead for a while and now I'm up, you know. It's like the spirits jump from body to body.
Yeah, they use it as a vehicle for the deadites, for the demons. Yeah, it's far from a zombie. I don't consider Evil Dead zombie at all.
Uh-uh.
Because they have personalities, they can talk, they fuck with people really bad.
they try to drive them nuts.
Yeah, well, it reminds me of Texas Chainsaw Massacre Part 2. One of the things Dennis Hopper tells the girl is, you know, this family feeds on fear. They enjoy it. And that's what it is. It's just the fear and being able to control somebody like that is what the deadites get off on. And they don't want to just kill you. They want to drive you absolutely insane.
And possess you and use your body to do their will.
Right.
And for whatever reason, I don't think it's really ever truly explained why. They get to Ash, but they can't take him over completely.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas they take everybody else out pretty easily. But Fresh Eyes, again, I always remembered Evil Dead 2 as kind of, it's the capstone of the series, I think, because it's a segue between the original true horror movie and the final kind of action comedy.
Well, it makes itself its own movie and is almost more of a reboot than a sequel.
Right.
Because it reestablishes the franchise.
I would say Evil Dead 2 is more fun to watch.
Than
the first one. But it's not scarier. So if you're looking out of the series, if you're looking for a true horror movie, check out the first one.
Well, in the first one, it takes a little while for, you know, the action to get there. Not very long, but longer than it does in Evil Dead 2. Evil Dead 2 jumps right into it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the first night there, they're all hell breaks loose.
Yeah, within their first few minutes, he's chopping her head off with a shovel.
Right.
So
it doesn't mess around with getting to the good stuff. And it establishes the character of Ash as we know him today, and as he grew going forward in the canon.
And again, Part 2 is more of a prequel to Part 3 as opposed to a sequel.
To Part 1.
Yeah. So, and then just recently watched it again, and we're watching it right now, Army of Darkness.
You know, the title is actually Bruce Campbell versus the Army of Darkness.
Yeah.
Just to make sure we clear that up with everybody.
Strangely enough, they didn't say it was Ash versus the Army of Darkness.
It's Bruce Campbell versus the Army of Darkness. Which is better than the other name they were thinking of, which they actually were thinking of calling it Medieval Dead.
I was watching it pretty close, but did they ever explain how he went from a cabin in the woods in, like, California or wherever they're from to...
Well, I mean, at the end of Part 2, he goes through that vortex and lands there. So it,
but at the end of Part 3, he wakes up wherever he is.
Yeah, well, they sent him back a different way. He didn't go back through a vortex.
Yeah, he slept in a cave.
But how the vortex ended up going all the way to medieval times, that is never explained.
Well,
because he should have just gone through a vortex and ended up still in the woods where he was just a long time ago.
Yeah, but he would have been in America in the
13th. Yeah, there would have been a bunch of Indians out there or something.
hey, you know, plot holes, we don't really care. One of those things.
One of those things you just accept it as the way it is. So Army of Darkness, it continues on with where Evil Dead 2 left off with establishing Ash as what he has come to be, the legend of Ash.
Well, literally, it's like the first 5 minutes of Army of Darkness is the last 5 minutes of Evil Dead 2.
Yep.
Him getting pulling through the portal, him coming with the car, them noticing that he's the guy with the chainsaw, so he's the guy in the book and all that stuff.
Right.
That stop motion, the Harryhausen, the Ray Harryhausen tribute.
Yeah, yeah.
Is phenomenal. The skeleton walkers.
They're hilarious, dude.
Yeah.
They're great. They're a great part of the film. There's so much of this film that it goes back and forth from horror to comedy, and it's such a good blend of the two. The scene whenever he gets the Necronomicon and the skeletons come out from the ground and start grabbing him and poking him in the eye, Three Stooges style, yeah, and everything. It's just, it works so well. And Bruce Campbell is such an amazing actor when it comes to playing Ash.
Well, I think it's so cool, too, is because, and this is, again, this is a critical view. This isn't a fanboy's view of how you know, like these certain scenes that you've followed. It's like, oh, it's like you're watching it as a narrative story, you know, just like a sequence. And you watch it and you're like, okay, the Three Stooges scene, him talking shit to the girls, or, you know, talking shit to the natives, but still, like, he's talking, you know, hey,
it's baby. Condescending as hell.
He's condescending or whatever. And it's like, you wonder if he didn't just completely lose his mind. Like, he's just lost it. He's gone. And he's just... he's at a point where he's just like, you know what? Screw it. I'm just going to deal with shit. Like, I've got no more fear left to have. Like, I've been scared through two solid movies, and now I'm back in time in medieval Europe, so fuck you. You know what I mean? Like, and I don't know if that was necessarily written into the screenplay, but that's the feeling I got watching it today.
Right.
You know, I've always thought of Ash as a badass, and especially in Army of Darkness, but it never occurred to me, it's like, think of yourself, you know, it's like he never got a nap. Like, he hasn't slept since he pulled up to that cabin in the woods in Evil Dead 2. And, like, he's just been fighting weird stuff constantly without...
which he still doesn't understand.
Yeah, he's just like, even himself, like, whenever the little ashes pop out of the mirror, they're poking him in the ass, and he's just like...
which is a great homage to that hand scene from Part 2.
Mm-hmm.
It's so well done. The special effects on that are just... They're pretty awesome.
Well, it's also so slapstick.
Yeah.
Like, even the scene where he slips in the oatmeal and flips upside down, he's, like, trying to keep himself from... you know, he's, like... and the little ashes are like, look at that.
He slams down into the stove, burns himself.
Such a great movie. So, yes, I think even nostalgia-wise... Watching Army of Darkness today, you know, full through, no breaks, no nothing. Like, okay, is this good because it's nostalgic, or is it good because it's good? And the answer is just good because it's good.
Yeah.
It's creative. It's funny. It's got moments where you're like, what the hell is going on? But then whenever you put it in context of like, again, he hasn't had a nap. He's been awake for like 8 days. You know.
It sets itself very much apart from other horror movies.
And you wonder, because so much of the effects, I think all of the effects, I mean, they do some stuff with some animation and some stop motion and some green screen. But again, there's no CGI in this, so it's all practical effects.
Yeah.
You know, when the skeleton...
and camera work.
When the skeletons are talking and moving, you can kind of see the choppiness of the stop motion.
Yeah.
And whenever they get hit and their bones shatter and they scream and stuff, you know. It's so good.
And it's so unbelievable.
Oh, yeah.
The movie, so much of the movie makes no sense if you're trying to look at it in a literal way.
Well, that's what I'm talking about, is I think he just lost his mind. Like,
yeah.
He's there, he's helping, he's fighting, he's the chosen one. But he's also just mentally gone.
Yeah.
You know, it's just like, He's got nothing left to give.
To the point of fatigue where he's in delirium at this point.
Like, oh, there's an army of the dead coming. He's just like, well, blow them up with dynamite. Let's go. Let me invent dynamite real quick. Yeah.
The guy that works at S-Bar knows how to make dynamite in medieval times.
And a mechanical hand. Yeah. Like Luke Skywalker.
That can crush cans. That whole scene where he's inventing the montage of him making the hand and everything is... It's awesome, dude. Yes. That has a lot to do with the sound effects, with the camera work. It's just a scene that works so well, man.
Well, and it's so great. It's like we talk about whenever they try to remake movies and they spend a lot of money on CGI and they try to get it. It's like when they get into the detail and they try to explain how it is, you know, that all of this happens. And it's like, well, in Evil Dead 2, I've got no problem believing. Because he even has a little thing that he hooks his the pull lever on his chainsaw, yeah, like on the strap. So yeah, whatever. He's got a chainsaw attached to his hand. He throws that little thing in there, and he's ready to go. He's got the strap that holds it on, but all it takes is a little montage of basically somebody fastening a belt, yeah, and it's the sound effects. It's all foo, shock. Shink.
Yeah.
Badass. It's like, you don't need to know how or why, or how it is that it doesn't even hurt that he got his hand cut off like 20 minutes ago.
Yeah.
And now he can wield a chainsaw.
There's no infection or anything.
he's just that badass. Now, you said you had a list of all the things, all the people Sam Raimi played.
Yes.
Ted Raimi. How much time do we have? Because I know he was in there a lot.
He had four roles in the movie.
All together. In all three movies?
No, that's just Army of Darkness.
Okay.
He was in Evil Dead 2 and Army of Darkness. Because Evil Dead 2, he was the possessed Henrietta in the basement. In Army of Darkness, he was the cowardly warrior, who was the guy with saying, with the steel. Yeah.
The steel is yours. Yes. He's got like a little wig and a beard.
Yes. Yeah. He was a one-eyed swordsmith. He was also one of the villagers who got all excited about Ash's speech. That's the one where my sword is steel is yours. And he was the clerk in S-Mart at the theatrical release ending,
yeah,
where Ash is telling the story to. And he's not believing Ash at all until one of the Deadites decides to pop up and come after the king. But some of the other people in this movie, you know, Bridget Fonda is in it, as we talked about earlier. She's the third of four actresses to play Linda. Chop Top himself has a cameo in it. He's one of the Army of Darkness leaders. Yeah, Army of Dead leaders. Bruce Campbell's father plays a small role as one of the villagers in it. William Lustig, he's the guy that developed the home video company Blue Underground, and he directed Maniac and Maniac Cop. He has a cameo in the movie also. People were very excited about Evil Dead 3, Army of Darkness.
Mm-hmm.
It was a movie that they had been wanting to make for a while. You know, actually, originally, Evil Dead 2 was supposed to be set in medieval times, and they decided instead to go ahead and redo the story from the first one because they didn't have the budget to do a medieval set, mm-hmm, movie. Until they finally got the money to go ahead and set up the
part three,
yeah.
Which they got because of Darkman.
Yes, yeah, it was just the Darkman is what gave them the money. People were willing to spend the money to make the movie. But yeah, the movie was really supposed to be called Medieval Dead, which I find hilarious. Universal refused to make that title, and it became known as the Evil Dead 3 Army of Darkness. And of course, from there, it went to Bruce Campbell versus Army of Darkness. And of course, you know, the Delta 88 is the original, the same car in all the movies.
And Spider-Man.
It's Uncle Ben's vehicle.
It was in Darkman. Every movie that Sam Raimi makes.
Yes. And I remember Bruce Campbell in an interview, first season of Ash vs. Evil Dead, he said that he remembered when they were filming the Evil Dead movies, that when the key was in the ignition and you open the door, the car, you know, it has one of those alerts that the key is in the ignition. And it was kind of off. And he says that whenever they started filming Ash vs. Evil Dead, he opened the door and he realized it's the same damn car. They still had the same car for, wow, Ash vs. Evil Dead.
The car's been destroyed a lot.
And I mean, apparently, they had stunt cars, it was actually... It was Sam Raimi's car in high school.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it just... That's a fascinating piece of trivia.
I remember when Spider-Man first came out, because that was Uncle Ben's car.
Yeah.
And it was one of those things, like, I knew Sam Raimi was directing it, and I knew, you know, it was the biggest budget movie that he'd done, and blah, 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 blah. But I'm sitting there, like, that, because the movie, Spider-Man came out in 03. So that car was old.
Yeah.
You know, it was an old car for... to be on the road at that time. And I remember just being like, okay, where do I know that car from? Like, it's... holy shit, that's the same car. Like, and then I read an article, it's like Sam Raimi thinks it's like his good luck charm, so he uses it in every movie he's in, every movie he does. And it's apparently in part 2 and 3 somewhere. It's like on the road, or it's parked somewhere. It's in the movie somewhere. Yeah. And, but yeah,
it's pretty awesome. Another little fun fact about Army of Darkness, the Klaatu Barada Nikto. You know where that's from originally? The Day the Earth Stood Still.
That was right, yeah.
They had to say to stop the robot. so that's where that was lifted from. Another little homage.
I didn't
there.
Say every single little syllable, but I said them. He's like bargaining with the demons. Yeah. Like, I said the words. They're like, no, you didn't.
Another little bit. The originally, Universal wanted the film to get a PG-13 rating. Of course, Raimi refused to. The initial submission was NC-17.
For Army of Darkness.
Yeah. So what they did is they cut out a particular scene that was really bad, and they got it down to an R rating.
I can't imagine.
But he wouldn't go all the way down to where it was
PG-13. No. I can't. I've seen this on like regular TV.
Yeah.
And there's no cussing in it, and there's no sex, and the violence is all cartoonish. I can't really.
It was a really, really brutal scene where he beheaded a female deadite. Is what they cut out. That's what actually brought it up.
The deadites themselves are pretty pretty rough. They are scary, so fair enough.
Roger Ebert hated the movie.
Of course. He didn't like a lot of stuff.
He said the movie isn't as funny or entertaining as Evil Dead 2.
I disagree.
Yeah, it's definitely funnier than Evil Dead 2. it takes it up another notch. What else we got? Okay, here's a little bit. Originally, the role of Sheila, one of the people that auditioned for that role that actually tried to get it, whereas I just saw it a little while ago, Mr. Cracchio. Do you remember a scandalous 17-year-old named Tracy Lords?
Mm-hmm.
She originally auditioned for the role of Sheila in this movie.
Wow.
Yeah, it's a pretty crazy little fact, isn't it? That would have been a different movie.
She was trying to go legit at that time, trying to get out of the...
Yeah.
Well, she had been out of the other business because she got in trouble for being underage.
Underage, using a fake ID, yeah.
But trying to get out of that whole... out from under the cover of that.
And of course, as you know, the film actually has two endings.
Yes.
The original ending was the theatrical release ending was him back at the S-Mart explaining to Ted Raimi, finishing up the story that he had just got through telling, with Ted Raimi doubting what he said was true, and a deadite shows up where he dispatches it quickly with a 12-gauge shotgun from S-Mart. And the ending that was changed, which you can get on the director's cut version of the in some of the special edition DVDs, he ends up getting a potion that he has to drink 6 drops of to wake up, to go to sleep, then wake up back where he's supposed to be, where he drinks too much of the potion, sleeps a little bit too long, and ends up in a post-apocalyptic London.
Yes.
Wakes up 100 years later than he was supposed to.
Well, that's what I was saying before, is because, like, yeah, he's in post-apocalyptic London, but he starts off in a cabin in the woods in America, so it's like they don't really explain. I mean, the vortex did, like, fly him off into the sky, too, so he went off that way. But, yeah, like I said, with fresh eyes, you know, you forget. I had forgotten how much Evil Ash was in the second one.
Well, yeah, he's a lot, dude.
He's in the second one. I mean, obviously, the King of the Dead in this one is Bruce Campbell. He's Evil Ash, but he's not the same.
And when he splits, that whole scene where the eye pops up on his shoulder, and the next thing you know, he has two heads. It is phenomenal how they did that scene. The special effects are great with it. That eye looks so real on his shoulder.
Yeah.
It's just creepy as hell, man.
Well, he drinks the boiling water to kill
the
little him that he swallowed. And the little him just grows.
Okay, another little tidbit. One of the items you can see in the trunk of Ash's car in Army of Darkness is a copy of Dark Horse Presents 5th Anniversary Special, which was published April 1991. Comic includes the very first installment of Frank Miller's Sin City.
Oh, wow.
It is also an issue of Fangoria. These were not product placements. It's just what Raimi had in the trunk of the car. They had to clean the car out. That's just what he had in the trunk.
Wow.
Sitting in there. It's a pretty cool little effect. So, yeah, it's Army of Darkness is just a classic horror movie. I don't know any horror fan that hasn't seen the Evil Dead trilogy.
Yeah. Well, but when's the last time you saw it? That's right. The thing. Right. That's what this little project was for, was because I was delighted at how much that I didn't either notice, remember, hadn't
really paid
attention
before. But you
forget about
stuff. You remember the main things, and you forget about some of the little stuff that.
But again, like you say, the little hand thing, the noticing, like, man, dude hasn't slept. That dude has not slept since he arrived at the cabin. Do we put part one in continuity? Then he hasn't slept in three whole movies.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? He had to go back and kill all his friends again. Like, it's... But,
what's interesting is the Ash vs. Evil Dead series takes place after one. It doesn't go into two or three or Army of Darkness. Because one of the reasons he left his hometown was because he had killed his sister. His sister had died and his friends had died. And he was he had the nickname of Ashy Slashy because people felt as though he had killed his friends. Yep.
All right, so fresh eyes, fingers and thumbs, severed hands. What would you say of the trilogy? Where do you need to go? Like, obviously, you need to watch them in order. But if you're only going to watch one... Evil Dead 2?
Yeah.
Is that because of the establishment? Or is that because of the mythos?
I prefer it as a movie to the other ones.
To Army of Darkness, even?
Yeah. Yeah, I think so.
I'm going to say, myself... Again, if you're looking for a pure horror movie,
yep,
watch the first one.
Yep.
If you want an action movie, kind of a lighthearted, I mean, it's violent, it's got scary parts, it's got plenty of blood, gore, and ghosts, and, you know, demons and stuff, Army of Darkness. If you're looking for somewhere in between, it's not too terrifying, but it's also pretty damn funny, part two.
Yeah.
Definitely watch all three of them, though.
Yeah,
it's certainly worth your time.
I agree with that. Just personally, I think it's because 2 was a big part of me growing up. That was the first one I saw. Yeah. I didn't see part 1. I saw part 2 first. And I love that movie, man. I remember me and my cousin we were amateur filmmakers when we were young, once his mom got a VHS recorder. And I've shown you some of the stuff we used to make and everything. And we used to film... I would act out that hand scene all the time, and that movie was a big part of my childhood.
Well, one of the greatest things about the hand scene too is the sound effects.
Yeah, it's like a thing just to the upteenth power.
Yeah. Well, awesome. Well, I hope you enjoyed this first installment of Fresh Eyes. I mean, we'll probably won't do an entire trilogy next time. We'll probably try to keep it closer to one movie. And, you know, I think we might even talk, you said, you mentioned Thing. We might talk about The Thing next time because it's one I've just been able to recently see again, beginning to end with no interruptions, no kids, no pause, and just watching a movie and enjoying it. So, but hopefully you enjoyed this. If you got questions, comments, what's your favorite Evil Dead? What's your favorite of the trilogy? Ash vs. Evil Dead, I mean, that ran for a couple of years. There's comics, there's video games, there's all kinds of
stuff. It's a huge canon.
It's a big franchise.
There's three seasons of the series on Stars. It's a... There's lots of Ash to take in.
So let us know what your favorite is. And again, I want to give a shout out to the Hail Ming Power Hour for doing this really, really good episode on Army of Darkness recently. That just really was like, I was sitting there like, man, I really have to go back and watch this movie. They like really sold it, you know? So until next time, let's keep it scary.
Later.
Barbara.